And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I need to push the record button. Okay, here we go. Good morning. This is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Okay, now I've got everything turned up. I got sidetracked. It's my own fault. Sometimes it's so hard for me to figure out where I want to start. So I'm gonna start with what I was looking at just now. Now, I don't blame you at all if you hear what I'm saying and you go, no, that can't be true. I don't know if I can believe that. If this is really true, wouldn't every physician talk about this? Wouldn't this be on billboards? Well, it probably should be. Okay. I started this about a week ago. And you know what? I'm just trying to figure out what can I learn here and what can I teach myself. This information is so good. I want to talk this morning about a type of a microalgae. When I say microalgae, you got two types. You got microalgae, which is teeny tiny or microscopic. So if you took your pen and you put a small dot on a piece of paper, you know, the end of a pen head, there would be thousands upon thousands of algae there. That's microalgae. Macro would be stuff like you watch a nature documentary and you see kelp waving back and forth in the ocean as sea turtles look for things to eat or something like that. So there's a type of a microalgae that's been used by human beings for a long period of time. In studying this topic, I have read that that was one of the main foods of the Aztecs. Well, I did not know that. You remember the Spanish conquistadors conquered the Aztecs. They had some help from smallpox, didn't they? Anyway, I came across one study. Man, I can't even literally believe it myself. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to flesh it out. And we're gonna just talk about this. And you know what? I'm not perfect at doing this because there's a lot of aspects of this study that I wanted to look up. I haven't yet. But I'm going to do the best I can to relay the information to you. Okay, so who out there in the listening audience this morning, you know somebody that has dementia? So they become forgetful. You know, if somebody has Alzheimer's, wouldn't it be fairly common for them to ask you the same question or repeat a story that they had just told you 5 minutes earlier, but they have no recollection or knowledge of telling you anything? Okay. Well, there was an animal study done. You know what? What does it say when was this done? Anyway, I'll look it up later. No, I've got it right here. Oh, that's right. Okay. Here it comes from the year 2011. This is the first time I've seen it, so I'm like 14 years behind the curve on this. So in this particular study, they're suggesting very, very strongly that maybe they have found something here that can protect your brain against dementia and or Alzheimer's. And so a lot of times when a neurologist orders an MRI of the brain, one of the first structures they're going to look at is the structure in the middle portion of the brain, or the midline between the right and the left hemisphere. It's called the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is kind of ground zero, or traffic control for short-term memory. Okay? So this is a study that was done on mice. It was done in a hospital in Taiwan. But I want you just to kind of hear this out right here. Okay. What the researchers did was they did experiments on what are called senescence accelerated prone 8 mice. They're called SAMPE 8 mice. Anyway, what that means is this particular line of mice, they age super rapidly. And so when you have a mouse that ages super rapidly, that kind of gets them through the learning curve on what can we do to see if we can interrupt the rapid aging process. But this is what they like to use in research. So it's a favorite subject for scientists. that are trying to study anti-aging substances, whether that be a pharmaceutical drug that's in a trial or a natural substance. Now, I'll tell you this. Since about the late 1990s, I've tried to pay attention to any studies that are being hinted at doing or drug trials that they're currently involved in, you know, preliminary trials for Alzheimer's or dementia. And I'm just going to give a rough guess. Let's say there have been 27 specific drug trials. Each one's a different drug that a pharmaceutical company would produce and study to see if they can reverse dementia or Alzheimer's. Could you imagine, folks, what that would look like if they could find a drug that could reverse memory loss or dementia or Alzheimer's? Oh, my goodness. It would be the top-selling drug, you know, most likely in a certain age category, right? But out of probably 27 drug trials, how many of those drugs have been successful? That would be zero. That's because they don't ever really address the long-term decay and the deterioration and the loss of circulation and all the beta amyloid plaque that builds up and the tau proteins. You just can't undo all that stuff. Some experts actually say that Alzheimer's is 40 years in the making. You can't turn it around with one drug in 4 days. Anyway, so they have these mice. That's just the way that they've been designed. They're going to age rapidly, so they're testing anything they can to see if they can reverse the effects of aging or if it has like an anti-aging effect. Are you with me on that? So here's what they did. The mice were given a daily either 50 or 100 milligram water extract that contained spirulina. And they did that per kilogram of body weight for 12 weeks. So if that had been a human being, I looked at the estimation, that was somewhere between 200 and maybe 400 milligrams of spirulina. Even if you bought a tablet of spirulina, most likely it's right at 500 milligrams. That would be more than what they gave these mice. Okay? So what they're going to do is they're going to try it and see if it works. So they had a control group of mice that were giving nothing. Okay? They were not given any spirulina at all, which that's a type of a blue-green microalgae. So at the end of 12 weeks, the researchers placed their mice in a cage complex that had a dark room in it. Normally, I think that's what mice like. They like to go in the dark. But the problem was, when these mice began to enter the dark room, they got a electric shock. Now, is that very nice? Nope. But, you know, they're shocking them because they want to find out how does their brain respond. So the next day, the researchers measured how many seconds the animals would avoid the dark room. Okay? Now, if I walked into a dark room and I put my hand on the wall and I tried to flip a switch but I got a shock instead, I think I would walk up to it the next day and do the same thing. Of course I wouldn't. Pain is a pretty good teacher. So the longer that the mice managed to avoid going in the dark room, that was a clear indication that their brain was functioning better. You know what I mean. They were able to remember, like, hey, don't go in that dark room, you're going to get a shock. Now, what the scientists called that, they called that the passive avoidance test. Okay? Here's the second part of it. This right here. I've got four charts right here. I know you can't see them. This is a radio, but let me sort of explain them to you. So it says the figures below show that spirulina supplements, that's the algae, they raise the learning capacity of the mice that are bred to become senile. And what they did was they raised them to the level of the mice that were perfectly normal. Remember, they had a control group of what you would call healthy mice. Mice whose brains were in perfect working order. Okay, so the normal mice, yes, those are the ones that don't age quickly. They don't develop senility, really. They age normally or slowly. So in the brain tissue of the untreated mice, you know, the ones that were bred to become senile, they found beta amyloid plaques almost identical to what you would find with a normal human being that has Alzheimer's. Well, I meant to say human being. You know what I meant. So normally, when you look at an Alzheimer's brain, there's a lot of beta amyloid plaque. And they showed that the mice that were given spirulina, the ones that were senile, they couldn't find any amyloid plaque, or almost none, because I'm looking at the chart right here. It's just literally the spirulina made these mice that were genetically designed to develop senility or dementia or Alzheimer's, it made them function like normal mice. Folks, this is the sort of thing, you don't hear this every day. Now, what they did was they looked at something called the active avoidance time. And those that took the 200 milligrams of spirulina per kilogram of body weight, which is probably like a teeny tiny amount, they actually functioned better than the control mice that were healthy normal mice. Have you ever heard of a structure called the hippocampus? Well, I just mentioned it a while ago. But what they're doing is they're looking for plaque deposition in the hippocampus. That's where short-term memory takes place. I mean, close enough, right? The mice that were bred to be senile and have dementia, when they took spirulina, oh my goodness, you didn't have all this plaque form in the hippocampus. Now in the control group, oh my goodness, they could measure the plaque like there's no tomorrow. And the same was for the whole brain. Actually, the whole brain of the senile mice had less plaque than the control group did. They actually have one of their charts. They're measuring what's called lipid peroxidation level of the brain. And they have the control. They have the control mouse, which is the one that's not bred to have Alzheimer's. That's a normal, healthy mouse. Then they have the group of mice that are senile. And they're looking for how much plaque they find in the cortex or in the striatum or the hippocampus. And what they're doing is they're measuring lipid peroxidation. That basically means how much is the brain rusting and how much inflammation is there. Folks, I cannot make this up. The ones that were fed just a teeny tiny amount of spirulina, they by far and away had the least amount of oxidation of the brain. Here's what the researchers found out. They said that the spirulina had boosted the production in the brain of endogenous detoxifying enzymes, such as catalase and glutathione peroxidase. You know what that results in? Their brain does not rust out or become damaged. Folks, to me, that's just incredible. What have you got to lose? What if you know of several siblings that have dementia and Alzheimer's? Wouldn't that kind of give you pause? Where you might say, you know what, maybe I'm a little bit predisposed toward having problems. Okay, study number two. Now, this one, I found myself liking this one a whole lot because I'm going to read the this study. I found this from a journal called Food, Science, and Nutrition, March 2025. You want to hear the title? Well, get this right here. Here's the title. It's a long one. Effectiveness of Spirulina Supplementation on Sleep Quality, Mental Health Status, and Body Mass Index in Mild to Moderately Severe Depression Adults. So this is not a normal study. Did you hear what it said right there? They're trying to find out what is the effect of spirulina in adults that have mild to moderately severe depression. They go on to say it's a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. Man, this is brand spanking new. This is hot off the presses, March 2025. Man, you've got to hear this right here. Okay, this took place in Thailand. So Thai researchers experimented for 8 weeks with two groups of 33 test subjects, each with mild to moderate depression. Okay? Have you ever known someone in your life that was depressed? Oh, it's horrible. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. So during the experiment, one group took a placebo, which means basically there was nothing in it that would have a value. There's no nutritional value. There's nothing in a placebo that would actually help shift or improve the function of the body. It wouldn't make your cells healthier. It's just a sham. There's just nothing in it. It's inert. Maybe it was sugar for all I know. So during the experiment, one group of the depressed people took a placebo every night before bedtime, while the other group, and just listen to this. This is kind of shocking to me, because it's just a small amount. The other group took 2 grams of spirulina just before they went to bed. So are you with me on that? Right before they went to bed, they took one half of the depressed group, took 2 grams of spirulina. Okay, now they don't, I mean, this is just run-of-the-mill spirulina. It didn't say anything in here about any special extracts. It's just a spirulina. Just algae. Okay, so here's the results right here. During the experiment, the researchers measured the subject's sleep using what's called the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index Questionnaire. I wonder if they give that to people when they do a sleep study on them before they test them for a CPAP, okay? I don't know. We can find out, though. So the lower this Pittsburgh sleep quality score, the better. The better your sleep. So during the experiment, scores of both groups improved, one just a little bit, but the decrease was most convincing in the experimental group, which is basically the group that was given spirulina. Now, you can't see the chart, but it says estimated marginal means of the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index. Folks, it just keeps getting better and better and better. Now, what they did is they followed them for 8 weeks, and they showed where they started out as saying their sleep was, you know, so-so. But the group that took the spirulina, it just keeps getting better from week 0 to week 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way to 7, 8. It's almost like a diagonal line. It's not at 45 degrees, but it looks like it's at 30 degrees. But the number keeps dropping lower and lower the longer they took the 2 grams of spirulina before bedtime. Okay. Okay, so here's what it says right here. So it was an 8-week experiment. So, okay, so I'm trying to extrapolate the data here. Sometimes I don't do a great job of it. But what they showed was, in the experimental group that took 2 grams of spirulina before they went to bed, it says their sleep improved from moderate to very good. Man, you can't make that up. Now, if you told me if I asked you, how would you rate the quality of your sleep right now? Maybe the number 10 is the most excellent sleep and 0 is the worst sleep of all time. I know I'm kind of doing it reverse, but that's kind of how I grade it. If you told me your sleep was a perfect 10, I'd say, oh my goodness, that's amazing. You wake up refreshed, you feel like $1 million, you can't wait to tackle the day. You're just ready to get up and get after it and go. But what if you woke up in the morning and you said, I'm not talking to anybody for at least 2 hours. I'm going to crash on the couch and try to see if I can get my second wind. That would be horrible sleep. But if your sleep improved from moderate all the way up to very good, now, folks, that's impressive. And this was done, you remember, on people that have moderate to severe depression. Oh, my goodness. Now, get this right here. This is the next part that really gets me. All right. One of the ways that you can evaluate the quality of your sleep is how long does it take for you to fall asleep once you lay your head on the pillow? Well, you know how long it takes. But if you ask some people, they might say 5 minutes. You know, before they drift off and they sleep good and they wake up refreshed. That would be excellent sleep. But what if you talk to an individual and they say, oh my goodness, I just lie in bed for at least 2 hours. My mind is racing. I can't turn my brain off. I just wish I could experience peace. And you know, their sleep is horrible. It takes forever to fall asleep. Now listen to this right here. Compared to the control group, and remember, these are people that had depression, those that supplemented with the spirulina, it reduced the time it took the subjects to fall asleep, in medical terms they call it sleep latency, by 15 minutes. You fall asleep 15 minutes faster. I don't know how you want to interpret that, but the very simple way that I want to think about that is this. Anything that helps your body work better and heal and repair faster, maybe it's got a nutrient in it or a substance that helps improve the function of your nervous system. But if you found something that would help you fall asleep 15 minutes faster, that would be like a gold mine, wouldn't it? Well, that's what they did with spirulina. Here's what the researcher said. They said supplementing with spirulina, a natural food supplement, is an option for increasing sleep quality and mental health. Now, you'll have to forgive me. I did not look up the part of the study about how it improved their mental health. So I can't give that to you. But it is interesting, isn't it? Okay. Here's another one right here. Actually, oh yeah, this is the one that I want to discuss with. This is probably the one that I wanted to start with. So, this also, oh my goodness, it's just so interesting. So I found this animal study. Okay, here's what they did. This comes from the American Journal of Pathology. You know what pathology means? It means studying a disease process or the study of disease. I took pathology classes in school. They were interesting. I remember we spent a lot of time looking at normal tissue under a microscope and then looking at tissue, the same tissue, but the diseased version. So you could look at a normal healthy liver cell or liver tissue, but then again you could look at alcoholic cirrhosis, or you could look at a fatty liver on a slide. Oh, it's night and day. I'm kind of a visual learner anyway, and you probably are too, but man, I remember that. I'm going, man, I'm never drinking. Or I'm not going to smoke cigarettes. If you looked at the lung tissue of a healthy lung versus a smoker, I think that probably motivates you not to smoke. Okay, the study comes from the American Journal of Pathology, and again, it is about spirulina. I just find this one, is really fascinating to me also. And I know you can figure out what I'm doing here. So it's not just about sleep, and it's not just about Alzheimer's or dementia, but you can see the direction I'm going, where I'm talking about one substance that the good Lord himself, or maybe what I should say is Jesus our Lord and Savior, has designed and created this. Now, how did Jesus know how to make spirulina? Well, that is a conversation that's probably too wonderful and too deep and too high and lofty for me to understand, but through faith, I believe that our Lord created everything because the Bible says so, and I believe it. All things were made by him and for him and through him. Nothing was made that wasn't made by him. Okay, so what they're doing is, from this American Journal of Pathology, I've got the study right here in front of me. It's on paper, and I've scribbled my notes all over it. The researchers, what they did was, they know how to cause breast cancer in a rat. They inject them with a highly carcinogenic compound, and then they observe that spirulina supplementation reduced the chance of tumor formation by a factor of 7. That may not sound impressive to you, but that's you decrease your risk of developing breast cancer by 700%. I cannot make that up. The researchers go on to say about spirulina that plants contain hundreds of known studied substances that may actually have a great protective effect against cancer, just like I've talked about in the past. There are studies that demonstrate that men that consume lots of green tea, just green tea, it's very protective against men developing prostate cancer. Well, I would think that would be easy to do, and that's very positive. But they talk about this cyanobacteria called spirulina. Its scientific name is Spirulina platensis. It contains lots of thiocyanidin, and it shows its structural formula. So I have not researched that as much as I want, but I found an article this morning. I just didn't have time to put it all together. So it would really benefit me if I studied it first before I talked about it. But another thing that spirulina has, it has a really generous amount of a trace mineral known as selenium. I'm thinking of one study where a farmer gave his cows selenium and it caused tumors to disappear. This stuff is almost like a dark blue-green color, which means it is loaded with chlorophyll. And there's a certain type of fatty acid that's found in spirulina. It's called gamma-linoleic acid. Now, that has implications when it comes to greatly reducing inflammation in the body or improving hormones. Most of the listeners have never heard that maybe females or women are just a little bit more complicated hormonally than men are. You know, I'm just joking when I say that. But it's true. Okay, there are... Okay, let me just talk about what it says here. This comes from the Annals of Nutritional Metabolism, the year 2008. This is basically what the abstract says. The authors write, there are indications that substances such as the components of spirulina can inhibit cancer cell development or activate the immune system to kill cancer cells. Now, part of the article that I didn't finish this morning, they were saying that they have proven conclusively that spirulina increases what are called natural killer cells. Those are the cells within your immune system that actively seek out and destroy anything that doesn't belong. So if a cancer cell is formed, the natural killer cells go up to it and say, you do not belong in this perfect, beautiful body. We're going to eat you for breakfast. And we're going to clear you out of the system. That's what you want. Okay? But even though I read that to you from the Annals of Nutritional Metabolism, scientists have never really looked at whether spirulina can protect lab animals against cancer. So what they did was, the researchers injected 20 young female rats. I'm guessing they were teenager rats. Here's the name of the compound they injected them with, but you can bet your bottom dollar. I mean, this sounds horrible. It's a cancer causer. If they inject this carcinogenic compound, it's going to cause cancer, breast cancer. The name of the compound is 7,12-dimethylbenzoanthracene. Doesn't that just sound toxic? That is pure poison. So they gave 20 young female rats this cancer-causing toxic compound, and then they gave another 20 rats something that had nothing that would produce cancer. So half of both groups were given normal food, and the other half were given food that contained, and listen to this, 1% spirulina powder. 1%. The researchers did a mathematical calculation based on human beings' weight, whether you're maybe male or female, and the human equivalent of this dose. And by the way, this might be important to you. I don't know that it will be. It'd be really important to me. So the human equivalent of the spirulina was between 5 and 8 grams of spirulina a day. So in these rats, 1% of their normal food was spirulina. That's all they did. Not 5%, not 10%. I just find that so interesting. Of the rats that have been, and here's the results right here, of the rats that have been injected with that 7,12-dimethylbenzoanthracene, And the ones that ate standard food, that means food that didn't have the 1% spirulina, 87% developed tumors during the course of the experiment. And let me see if I've got the chart right here. That was over, I'm looking at the chart, and it shows it's around week number, it looks like week 13 to me. And they started noticing that if you were just on the standard rat food diet, and you were injected by that toxic cancer-causing chemicals, that's when you start developing tumors. Okay? Now, they said the rats that had been injected with that toxic compound, but they were given the diet, the food that had spirulina, you know, 1% of the child's weight, only 13% developed tumors. Now, I'm looking at it right now, and the tumors didn't start to develop in the 13% of those rats until a week about, I don't know, 18? That's what it looks like to me. I'm just estimating because the study went on for 20 weeks. Okay. Man, that is so impressive to me. Only 13% developed tumors. Okay. Now, this right here, I don't even know if you're interested in this, but I find this very, very compelling to talk about. There's a type of a gene. You always hear about a person's genetic code, and they want to send you to a geneticist for further testing, and they want to find out if you have a genetic, you know, malformation, or if there is a gene that's, you know, mutated, it's gone from normal to unhealthy. But listen to this right here. They're showing that what they think happened was, and I think this is pertinent information for everyone listening. Maybe you have cancer, I don't know. They say that spirulina activated suicide genes in the cancer cells. I'm going, what? Now, to me, I'm going to pay attention when I read stuff like that. Let me repeat that one more time. According to what the researchers discovered, spirulina activated suicide genes in the cancer cells. Now, what does that mean to you and me? Now, a cancer cell, it is not a normal cell. It doesn't behave normally. It produces energy differently than a normal cell does. And man, are they toxic. Cancer cells are constantly spewing forth the worst toxic debris and waste of all time. It's just pure poison in the body. You're not better off by having, I'm sorry, I'm just saying it simply. I'm not trying to be real deep right now. No one is better off by having these toxic abnormal cells form a tumor and steal all your nutrients and steal all your vitamins and your fuel and all the good stuff for themselves. Yeah, maybe that's what I should say, is cancer cells are very self-centered, very selfish. They want everything for themselves. And see, that's not good. What we want is, we want to starve out the cancer cells. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. Let me go back to the topic here. I did that. I'm at fault. Spirulina activated suicide genes in the cancer cells. And so cancer cells, their hallmark is, you know, what do they say? It's the infection that never dies. It never goes away. So spirulina, all of a sudden in this study, it causes the cancer cells to go ahead and just die. Normally, researchers will call that apoptosis. It's called normal programmed cell death. That means even a normal healthy liver cell, as my example, that might normally live about 42 days. Well, at the end of 42 days, you want your body to remove the old liver cell. It's at the end of its usefulness. And we want to remove it so it can be replaced by a brand spanking new healthy liver cell that can do all kinds of good work for you to keep your body in good health and good working order. And so normal cells, they just reach the end of their lifespan and they're supposed to go ahead and die. Cancer cells don't do that. Let me read that to you the third time. Spirulina activated suicide genes in cancer cells. And I'm thinking, oh, this is so interesting. You mean we've just discovered? And see, I'm learning here. Roy is definitely learning. I'm paying attention to this. So if spirulina in these rats is causing the tumor or the cancer to go ahead and take its own life, I'm thinking, man, that's a good deal. Does spirulina do that to normal healthy cells? No, because they're behaving normally. They normally get to the end of their usefulness and their lifespan, and they just go ahead and die. Cancer cells don't do that. I think that's a pretty good takeaway. Even if you did not hear anything else I said about dementia or Alzheimer's and beta amyloid plaque and spirulina, if you didn't pay attention to improving the sleep quality, I get it. But when it comes to cancer, maybe that's going to kind of touch your heartstrings there and you're going to pay attention to this one. Okay, here's another thing that they noticed right here. And I think this is really a big deal too. You know how one of the most common forms of cancer in women would be breast cancer? Well, this is what this is looking at right here. And a lot of times an oncologist is going to order a series of tests to find out if the cancer is responding to estrogen. Okay? And that kind of tells them how they're going to treat it. But listen to this right here. And I'm just quoting the researcher. It says, in addition to suicide genes or spirulina activating suicide genes in cancer cells, it reduced the number of estradiol alpha receptors and the concentration of the protein Ki-67. Now, you don't know what that means, but here's what it means. Estradiol, which is a very common form of estrogen, it can make hormone-sensitive cancer cells grow faster via the alpha receptor. Well, isn't that interesting? Well, spirulina reduces all that. So if you have a friend with breast cancer, actually, maybe the way that I would look at this, what if you have been treated by means of chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, just keep going, for breast cancer, and maybe it's not working out so great? Well, what would it harm you to consider trying to tilt the balance in the favor of your immune system and your body by considering spirulina? Okay, Ki-67, that's a marker for cell division. Anyway, we're getting a call. I'm going to go ahead and take the phone call. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan.
Yes, sir.
I have a younger sister. She's 68 years old and has been diagnosed with onset Alzheimer's and dementia. And I heard you talking about the spirulina. And I was wondering if that's a supplement that she could start taking.
Absolutely, she could.
Can you tell me how I get it, or how you spell it?
Yeah. Let me spell it first. Here, I'm going to have to do it phonically. S-P-I-R-U-L-I-N-A. Spirulina. Sometimes it's called a blue-green algae. But what I want you to think of is this is just food. People eat this all the time. Spirulina.
Okay.
Now, as far as how to get it, probably the easiest, if you wanted to like look up all the different brands, there's a brand that I like called Micro Ingredients. That's a brand name. But if you went to Amazon.com, you'd be able to at least look at the spirulina. I think it's like $25-$26 for a big bag of the tablets.
Okay.
I can look that up for you though, because I wanted to say it was what was the dose? Okay, here it is. Senile mice. Oh, it wasn't a big dose at all. But they gave them about 200 to 400 milligrams a day. But the tablets are going to come in a bag. They're going to be 500 milligram tablets. But here's what I believe. I believe that everybody's going to find the Goldilocks just right dose that's going to help them. So if it improves energy. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's a brand, Goldilocks?
No.
No, I'm sorry.
My bad. That's just a figure of speech. You've heard the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. She didn't want the porridge that was too hot or too cold. It wanted to be just right. So that's just me using an old figure of speech. So the brand name is called Micro Ingredients.
Ingredient, okay.
Yeah. So if you went to Amazon, you'd be able just to look it up so you could see it for yourself. Now, if you want to go to the health food store and buy it, perfect.
Okay.
But at least you could look at it to see what you're... But then what I meant by the Goldilocks just right dose, I think with spirulina or even the other form of algae that I like a lot called chlorella, you just have to be willing to experiment with the dose of it and find out which one helps you the most. And so, for example, I read the study earlier about improving the quality of the sleep, and it took 2 grams of spirulina before bedtime. Well, to me, that's a pretty powerful clue that it's going to affect the central nervous system and the brain in a very, very positive way. So that's like two or three different angles on this. So the other thing that I haven't gotten to this part of the topic yet, but in your body, you have every cell is composed of what's called a cell wall. Well, I'm convinced that spirulina helps get your cell walls back in good repair. So all I'm trying to do is talk about how do we get the body to heal and to repair and to rejuvenate. And your sister has nothing to lose by trying some spirulina.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I'm wanting to find out. I'm going to call her right now.
Good deal.
As soon as your show goes.
Yeah, she can even, if they have this program's being recorded right now, so even if she wants to tune in and listen to this tomorrow, she sure can.
Okay, she lives in Washington State. I don't know if they can get it up there or what.
Well, on the internet, it's called kbgs.org.com, I think. No, .org. If you'll type on that, she can listen to any program she wants. Or if somebody's in the house can do it for her. And I didn't even ask, is this just a very, very mild case of dementia?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. It's been very aggressive.
Oh, bless her heart.
She's only 68 or 69 years old.
Well, she's just a kid.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I'm so sorry about that, but I'm glad you love your sister and you care about her and you're trying to help her. That makes me happy.
You bet. Well, I sure appreciate it. I'm going to continue listening to the rest of your program and do some research on this.
Oh, good. I'm really happy about that. I think you're going to be very impressed by the research you come up with.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks, awesome. Buddy.
Thanks, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. The number here at the radio station is area code 903-589-8507. Just in case you want to call, maybe you have a question. Here we go. Good morning and welcome. All right, that's on me. Well, I saw the button light up, so I pushed it. I didn't think I pushed it too quick. They must have kind of disconnected about the same time. So 903-589-8507. Well, good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a question. This spirulina is very interesting. I'm glad to hear this, but I have a question. I have the skin on my index finger and thumb. It gets very thick, and then all of a sudden it peels, and it's peeling down to very tender layers.
Now, are you doing anything to cause it to do that? Like, are you a guitar player?
No.
Okay.
No, and it's happening on both hands. What would cause that? What can I do to stop it? And what can I do to prevent it from coming back?
Okay. Well, let's just go through the process of trying to figure this out. Is there anything that you can come up with as far as a gut instinct as to maybe what's triggering this?
No.
How much stress are you under?
Not very much.
Okay. Do you drink alcohol?
No.
Do you have any, are you taking any diabetic drugs of any kind?
I do. I'm type 1 diabetic, so I take insulin. And I take, what's the one for reflux? Omeprazole.
Omeprazole, okay. Omeprazole is the one that I'm going to start with. Anything that reduces the secretion of acid from the stomach is going to increase the likelihood of either infections or nutrient depletion. So what I'm looking at in my brain right now is there was a survey done by Oxford University of England. I started to say the Brits. That didn't make sense, but you know what, Oxford University. But when you take omeprazole, that takes on average 2 years off your lifespan. And they think it does so because you just become very depleted in nutrients. There's just not enough to go around. So this may be in part. Now, historically, when I look at a system of medicine called Oriental medicine or acupuncture, anything that affects the index finger, that's your liver right there. So if you told me this peeling was only on your ring finger at the tip of it, I would say, bingo, that means something's happening to the kidneys. That's a clue. But if it's on the index finger and the thumb, I've got to think liver, liver, liver. So does your doctor do routine blood tests? There's one called a comprehensive metabolic panel, and what they do is they measure liver enzymes.
Yeah, but I'm overdue to go back.
Well, how long has this peeling and thickening of the skin been?
A couple of months.
Okay. Are you taking anything like Tylenol or Advil?
No.
Okay. Do you feel good?
Usually.
Well, number one, maybe this is all because of the omeprazole. Any drug that's hard to metabolize and break down, but omeprazole, it's been shown to alter how your liver detoxifies. If it were me, and let me just kind of walk you through this, I would consider a diet based on, there's a lot of vegetables and there's a lot of grains out there, and there's stuff called rice and potatoes and oatmeal, and there's noodles and pasta. Well, I would avoid all that just to see if greatly reducing the amount of starches and carbohydrates made my acid reflux just completely disappear and go away. I've seen that at any number of times. And I would focus more on a meat-based diet that had vegetables that were very low in starch. So those are pretty simple and straightforward. That's squash and zucchini, celery, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, asparagus, green beans, things like that. Does that sound like anything you'd like to do?
I do a good bit of that. I don't like kale, but the rest of it I'm good with.
Well, no, it's just a matter of finding the things that are agreeable. So you like a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But you might be due for another test of your liver. I mean, normally a person's going to have a fatty liver if their tummy's bulging out quite a bit.
Yeah.
Are you pretty lean?
No.
Okay, so most likely you have a fatty liver, and that's probably my number one guess on why you've got the skin on your fingers starting to peel. This is God's way of helping your body alert you and tell you something's wrong with your body. So this is probably a fatty liver. And when the liver's full of fat, it gets all clogged up. It just can't filter and detoxify as well. Now, what I read earlier about the spirulina, it helped improve all the detoxification enzymes in the brain and that study on dementia. But the other type of algae that I like a lot is called chlorella. Chlorella has probably the highest natural concentration of an enzyme called superoxide dismutase. That's the one that starts repairing the mitochondria in the body. And that's probably one of the deeper issues that you're dealing with is your mitochondria. They're just not efficiently taking fuel and converting it into energy or burning it cleanly like you want. So thus, the liver has got a little bit too much fat in it from higher levels of insulin. So I think if we could get you to a point where we could figure out if it's your liver just complaining, that's probably how this could go away.
Okay.
Do you ever take anything to help your liver work better, like milk thistle or dandelion root, anything like that?
No.
Well, you might look up studies on how milk thistle or Spanish black radish. Always think that rutin is one of the main things that you want. But those are things that when you consume them, all of a sudden your body starts growing new tissue, and starts removing the old damaged disease tissue. So this is these would be some very easy, simple ways to improve yourself. Does your blood sugar run like about 90 first thing in the morning?
It was today.
Okay, excellent.
No. Usually, well, it's widely variant from getting low at 60, 65 to 200.
Is it normal to wake up with your blood sugar a little bit higher in the morning than when you went to bed at night?
Normally, yes.
That's the liver right there.
Okay.
Probably somewhere around 3 to 4 in the morning, maybe 2:30. Your liver's just dumping all the excess sugar, and so your sugar's going up when you wake up in the morning. That's the liver right there. So that'd be one more clue that we're working on the liver here. Could I interest you in a nice, delicious meal of liver and onions? Nobody takes me up on that ever.
I tried a while back, probably 3 months ago. I tried it, and I ate it.
Now, were you at gunpoint at the time?
No. My wife was gone for the weekend, and I cooked for myself, and I endured it.
So what you got here is you got an opportunity to improve your liver, and so this is maybe like a little bit of a side topic, but it's really the same thing. The speed at which blood flows through your liver is so critically important. So I'm going to be a bit ridiculous here. So could you imagine somebody just, let me choose a teenage boy because that way it doesn't sound like I'm attacking anyone. Teenage boy wants to sit down on the couch all day long and play video games and eat pizza and drink Coke. Doesn't get up and go outside and play. How fast is blood moving through his liver? Not real fast.
Not very.
But if he was outside going, I'm going to run down to the creek, I'm going to catch some crawfish, I'm going to do some yard work, I'm going to help my mom, you know, go to the grocery store. The faster that blood moves, the cleaner all the cells and tissues and the organs of the body are, but especially the liver and the kidneys. They've got to have a certain amount of blood flow just to be able to work properly. That's one of the reasons why being physically active and not being sedentary is just mission critical to improving the body or keep it in good working order. Do you have any type of exercise that you enjoy doing that would greatly improve your blood flow?
That keyword, enjoy, no.
Okay, we can remove the word enjoy. I tell you what, one of the exercises that I've read quite a bit about, just because I find the research so fascinating, is a technique called slow jogging. If you were to go to YouTube and type in slow jogging / research, what you would see is you would see a Japanese man that's like 88 years old demonstrating the technique, and he's written a book about it, and they have subtitles in English. It's like a 5-minute video. That would be a starting point, but it's so fascinating. And if you watch that 5-minute video on the research of slow jogging, you'd probably have 5 points going, oh my goodness, I can do that. And if I do that, I'm going to have this benefit and that benefit and that benefit.
Okay.
So just prayerfully consider that. And let's see if we can't get the liver better. And the liver's job is to constantly monitor the health and the well-being of the skin. Or another way of saying it is, the liver's job is to filter toxins out of the body so they don't end up in the skin. But if the fingers are peeling,
right.
I'm just saying I would consider the liver's maybe kind of crying out in pain saying, help me. And the way that you help the liver is by not eating starches and grains. You're already doing a lot of things right. You don't drink alcohol all day long.
No.
You don't drink diet soft drinks at all, do you?
Occasionally, not very often.
Well, that's going to set you back at least every time you have a soft drink. It'll set you back a week on progress. A diet soft drink, something with Splenda or sucralose. But you can start drinking herbal tea right now.
I used to drink a lot of soft drinks, but I'm down about one every other week or so.
Okay, good deal. Remember that study about the rats that were shocked when they walked in a room? I'm thinking your wife should get a shock. Never mind. Let me go back to the topic. Well, I hope that helps you a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye. All right, there's time for one more phone call, 903-589-8507. That's 903-589-8507. See, if you go from normal, beautiful, healthy skin to all of a sudden the skin begins to peel, you got to start thinking that maybe there's an issue. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Roy. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good. I was listening to your program this morning and the conversation about liver, and I was wondering where would I go to get my liver tested, if you know of any place in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Well, you could go to a website, and I don't know if this answers your question directly, but it's a starting point. You could go to a website called ownyourlabs.com. O-W-N. Okay. YourLabs.com. That's an online lab testing service. If you click on that, they have a simple test called a comprehensive metabolic panel. I think they charge $10 for it. You could order that. Number two, they have a different panel called hepatic panel, and that directly looks at how is the liver doing. So they'll check a lot more information. It's not very expensive at all. It's pretty cheap. But if you click on those and pay for them, they will give you the option of whatever lab that's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So let's just say you live in North Mesquite. I'm saying that because I used to go to North Mesquite. But anyway, you could click on that, and they would give you your choice of 10 different labs in the area. And you just choose the one you want to go to. Make an appointment, show up. 5 minutes later, you're out the door, and they'll email the lab results right back to you. That would be a starting point. But I know that...
Great, I think.
Or if you want to go to a gastroenterologist, that's fine. If you've got like $800 to blow, I'm just joking about that.
No, I think I've heard you mention that before on here, the labs, and I just couldn't recall it or never wrote it down.
No, and the reason I'm just joking about that is I would assume that the people that listen to my program, they would like to just take care of themselves. If the liver is not in great working order, they'd like to find a way, what can I do to help myself naturally? Instead of, well, you've got stage 3 liver failure, we're going to watch and wait until you have a transplant. Well, I don't like that plan at all. I'd rather be spending our energy, what do we do to heal the body where you don't need a transplant?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, good deal. Let me know how it turns out.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Well, thank you. That was very nice of you. All right. I think we're almost out of time for today. I had two more studies on spirulina. One of them was about... this was interesting right here. They did an experiment with taking spirulina before meals, and guess what happened? Significant loss of body fat. But this one, I need to come back and read that one to you because it's got so much rich detail. And I think if you hear it, it's going to be so impressive that you're going to start considering, I wonder if there's a way that I can naturally help myself without taking a drug. You know, folks, drugs are so hard on the liver and the kidneys. I know they're hard on every tissue, but if you just knew the amount of liver disease and kidney disease that's out there in the world right now, you'd just be shocked. Even in very young people. And no one's helpless. You can get yourself into a mess, but you can also get yourself out if you're willing to. This program is Health Essentials. I am your host, Roy Morgan. Lord willing, I'll be back this next Saturday at 7 o'clock, bright and early, and we'll pick up where we left off.